We're talking to old friends and very, very talented, experienced chefs, cooks, writers, you name it. Brian Paulsen and Michael Ruhlman, who I've known for 1,000 years. The new book is called Meat Pies. And let me tell you, you're talking to the right person. If you remember Peter, my husband, who's usually co-hosting this, was born and raised in Yorkshire. And his brother and his family, they live in Cornwall. And
Wow.
Peter and I both lived in Australia. So you're talking to people who know about meat pies.
No,
Although
you're lucky.
none of mine ever looked like yours. What I'd like to say is, I'd like to ask you why it was subtitled, the book, An Emerging American Craft. That was something I wasn't sure about. Would one of you like to take up that issue?
Well, I'll start, and Michael, you can fit in. All our books, this is the fourth one, they all use craft in the subtitle because charcuterie is what it's based on, and it's a craft. And pies are so important in international cuisine. And in America, when you say pies, everybody thinks you're talking sweet pies. And it's
Yes.
really started to turn the corner, like when we first wrote charcuterie, I don't know how long ago, 20 years ago,
Yeah, which is,
nobody could
by the
even
way,
pronounce.
listeners, in case you don't know, it's probably one of the most iconic books written in the culinary field. Everybody knows it, and everybody uses it. That was a real triumph. But go ahead. Sorry, Brian.
Yeah, so 20 years ago, people in America couldn't pronounce charcuterie, but
Yeah,
all over the
right.
world, people knew it. And now we were on the kind of the corner of that, and pies are an important part of the modern American menu. So that's why we said it's an emerging craft.
Well, like all of your books, I mean, you spend a great deal of time on technique and on getting it right. And as much as I've cooked in my lifetime, there's stuff and as many meat pies as I've had, you've dug up stuff that I never knew. I know things existed, but I never knew why. You always give the why. And that makes your books very distinctive.
Oh, yeah.
It took you longer to actually write this one than most. Tell us about that.
Oh, my
Hey,
goodness.
Michael,
Well,
go ahead. You take that one. This is 4 years of our life.
4 years, but it was, we were sort of talking about it, and Brian was talking about it and wanting to do it, and I was sort of on the fence, and then COVID hit. And he said, come on, let's do this book. Join me, and we'll do this book. And because it began, I think, in April 2020,
Yeah.
it just took a long time because the way these books work, and it's been such a harmonious relationship with Brian and where he teaches at Schoolcraft College. He's been able to do all the recipe testing there and also educated students on the very things that we're writing the book about.
Right.
So, and when COVID struck, classes ended, all in-person stuff ended. And everything was sort of delayed for a couple of years. So that's why COVID really, really made this a long-term project.
Well,
And you made a good point about the recipes. It's we do a lot about technique and method because being a college professor for 27 years, I would give the same recipe to 10 different students. I would get 10 different results. Two of them don't even talk about, but the other eight, I would take them separately. I would talk to them separately and say, "How did you come to that conclusion? What did you do? Why did you do that when I said, brown the meat in a pan or whatever the item is?" And I would look at it through the recipe through the student's eyes, and then write it in effect so anybody who's serious about cooking will get the concept of what was trying to be conveyed.
Well, I started telling you that, of course, my husband's from Yorkshire, and you didn't have a celebration without these little pork pies. But she never made them. The local butcher used to make the superior pork pie, and everybody has them for parties. I mean, this is, I don't recall ever seeing anybody actually make one.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, they're not that hard to show in the book. Some
well, I'm reading this and I'm thinking, why don't mine look like yours? Oh, which reminds me, I want to mention your photographer because he's wonderful.
Yeah, we must mention him. His name is Quentin Bacon, and he's one of the great food photographers, and we're really lucky to work with him. He's the perfect. He was so simpatico with our vision for it, and we took a lot of time doing process shots for the doughs and how to make these pies look good. So you can see the photos of how to crimp a dough, how to roll out the Blitz puff pastry, how to actually shape a hand-raised pie. All these are sort of painstakingly photographed step by step because it is so important. The visual aspect of learning this is very important.
Yeah, the technique is, you make it sound so simple. I never found it that simple. I mean, Peter used to love, he loved all meat pies, but particularly he liked that, what's the thing with the filet mignon in the center of it, what is called?
Beef Wellington. Yeah.
And, I mean, it used to be a disaster. I didn't care how much he loved it, I stopped making it. It used to get, you talk about that, it used to get, the crust used to be all soaking up wet and horrible. And I didn't know what to do. Go ahead. You address that.
Bake it on
Brian, how do you keep a crust for a beef Wellington or that style pie, which we have in the book? How do you keep a crust crisp?
Bake it on a rack. You bake it on a rack is one thing, but these rolled raised pies like a beef Wellington are made with puff pastry, which are about 50% butter. So once it's done, you start at very high heat, and the crust cooks and the meat cooks. As soon as you get it out, there's going to be juices and butter on the pan. You have to lift it up and put it on a cooling rack, or you can bake it on a rack in the oven so air circulates all the way around.
Do you want air vents?
Go ahead.
On a rolled raised pie, I like to leave both ends open, so that acts as a vent, so to speak.
Gotcha.
And like a pate en croute, Like in the book, the lamb. We have one similar to a beef Wellington. It's a lamb loin en croute. It's got a spinach and pine nut. Of course, you see that's crispy all the way around. And there's another thing called a moisture barrier, where here I use a crepe. So you wrap.
Heard of that. I mean, why didn't anybody ever tell me about that? Because they're simple to make. It sounds like it's a miracle addition.
When I make my beef Wellington, I do that. When I make a Wellington, I wrap the meat in the mushroom duxelle, and then I wrap that in a crepe, and then wrap that in puff pastry because there's moisture in the meat, moisture in the mushrooms. The crepe stops it from the moisture reaching the interior part of the dough, so the dough has a chance to cook. And the crepe's kind of a neutral-tasting item, but you're going to add flavor to it, like add fresh herbs and stuff to the crepe to add just a hint of flavor. And that's a simple technique that's been known by professional chefs for ever. And that's why we want to point it out and share it in the book, because that one little simple thing will change the outcome of the dish completely.
Yeah, well, your section here on dough basics was a real eye-opener. I don't bake, you know that. I remember bits and pieces from my mother, who was a baker, and I remember that she used to take the crust and poke forks in it, the holes and stuff like that.
Docking.
Hmm?
It was called docking. Docking.
Okay,
you poke holes in.
What I didn't notice was she did that and then baked the crust. So I'm in Australia trying to make strawberry pie, and they didn't have any of the ingredients that I would get in the U.S. supermarket anyhow. But I dutifully rolled out this dough, put it in a pot pan, pricked it all over, and then put in the strawberry, the runny strawberry filling. And it was a sight to behold. Oh, it went into all the, it lifted the whole, all the stuff, the soggy crust from the bottom up into little bubbles. It was just unreal. I never baked another strawberry pie. So, but you have all these good tips on doughs, how they, the techniques. And I mean, I don't recall, nobody ever told me about it really matters, like what direction you roll the thing. And oh, I do like the fact that you like a regular rolling pin rather than the silly French things.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I mean, if I have to use a French one, I will. But yeah, that rolling technique's important too, because you want the thickness of the dough to be the same all the way across. People have a tendency to put a lot of pressure on the forward roll.
Yes.
And we say, you know, so it gets thin on the top. So you got to turn it, you know, X, Y, and only roll in one direction. That way, put pressure in one direction. That way you can kind of control the thickness.
I mean, why didn't anybody else ever tell me that? No, you have a variety of doughs, although you seem to find a universal dough in this 3-2-1. Tell us what that is.
Three parts flour, two parts fat, one part water.
That is
a good all-purpose dough.
All-purpose crust, and it works every time. It works for sweet pies. It works for savory pies. It's just a great base dough, and it's one of, what do we have, four main doughs and a couple of specialty doughs in the book.
Yeah.
What do you do with all these people using experimental flours and things?
Well, with the gluten-free craze and the allergens that are around, I think that's a whole different story. I think we're actually poisoning ourselves with our own food supply because we genetically alter. But, you know, there's a need, you know, the different gluten-free flours. The one I like the best, one we use in the book, is Cup for Cup, which was developed by Thomas Keller. It's rice flour.
Is that what this
one's
from?
Yeah.
The one that's in gluten-free baking?
Yeah.
One of the things I really kind of enjoyed particularly about the book is you give a little background information, and there's quite an interesting history to savory pies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell our listeners about, listeners who think that pies are always supposed to be sweet, explain why.
Well, I'll start with the corn. I'm going to do pasties, okay, and then you say something, Michael. But
great.
Like in the old days, the crust wasn't supposed to be eaten necessarily. It was a container to hold the food. And here in Michigan, we have a pasty, which comes from the corn, actually a Cornish-style pie, right?
Where it's cornball. It's Cornish, yeah.
Yeah, Cornish. And, you know, here in Michigan, they use ground meat and rutabaga and carrot and onion and fold it over, and they would make these pies. At the turn of the last century, we had the largest copper mine in the United States, where all the copper pennies came from, was from the northern Michigan. And the copper miners would take these turnovers or pies and heat them up and then eat the filling and not the dough. The dough was just like, you know, the container it came in.
Uh-huh.
So, and then now savory pies, I mean, the richness of the dough, the best pies are the best doughs.
Well, you know,
yeah,
go ahead.
That's how these pies originated in the Middle Ages, is they made a flour and water crust, as simple as possible crust, to cook the food in. And it was both to a cooking vessel, and once it was cooked, it was preserved within the crust. And then you break the crust apart when you wanted to eat it and throw the crust away.
See, I was shocked by that. Nobody's ever mentioned that to me before.
That's kind of the history. That's the origin of the pie.
Now we've evolved, and the best pies, like, you know, the most famous and most difficult pâté en croûte, the crust is you know, the French version, but like the pâte brisée dough is like it's a rich dough, not as rich as a blitz plus pastry, but it's flaky and delicious, and it's what makes a single crust or two crusted pie so delicious.
You know, I never saw a thing on meat pies as focused on presentation and decoration. I mean, I'm looking at the beef and bone marrow pot pie, And it's a work of art with that marrow bone sticking out in the middle of it. And then
it's
you,
like
had,
you want to eat it, right?
Yeah, I wanted to. I really didn't understand where all these decorations come from. And you mentioned like how you got some of those things. What was the one in particular? The elk's horns or the
deer
antlers. The antlers. That you spend a lot of time. I could tell you, I'm not used to seeing the pies as beautiful as you have in this book. I mean, is that something that you just did yourself, or is it?
Oh,
I mean,
no.
I never saw that, having lived in many areas where savory pies are a real big deal. I've never seen anything as attentive to presentation.
The French would always, you know, and back in Karim and Escoffier days, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s, food was very, very decorated, you know, and that was very common to do. But I made it like the antlers for the venison pot pie. I went online and printed out a antlers, and then I cut it, made a stencil, and then stenciled
it.
Yeah,
I saw
that.
Very
simple to do.
That was ingenious. I thought that was ingenious. They made a stencil out of it. You printed it off and made a stencil. I love that. So the other thing that was new to me was the this wooden thing that you used.
High
dolly. Yeah, I've never even seen one of those. How common are they?
That's a hand-braised pie. That's an English pie. That's very traditional.
So
yeah,
I should have seen that.
Well, you can get them on Amazon. They're widely available.
Well, you know, I mean, you go through the different style of pies, which is certainly interesting. World raised. Can you run through just the definitions of these different pies real quick?
Sure, Brian,
well,
go
pot
ahead.
Pie, okay, pot pie is, you know, Michael and I had many, many discussions about this because he kept thinking like the old Swanson pot pies are like you'd be frozen from the 70s. And,
yeah, I remember those.
That was a marketing thing that Swanson did, you know. But pot pie means a single crust over a pot with a single vessel. It could be, you know, four portions or individual portions. The hand-raised pies are used with the pie dolly. That's a circular thing. You don't have to use that wooden thing. You could use like a mason jar or something like that.
Okay.
And then they're filled in a top put on top. But it's a very traditional-looking pie from Great Britain. The rolled raised pies are...
Let's just be clear. So that's one type is the pot pie with a crust lid on top, and that's it. What he just described as pot pie is a double-crusted pie. It's got a bottom and a lid. And that's a special type of double-crusted pie, which we call hand-raised pies, because you raise the dough up along the sides of the dolly to create individual hand-raised pies. So those are two.
Yeah.
Two.
Yep. Right. The third one is rolled raised pies, where you're wrapping something cylindrical, you know, like a beef Wellington would be a rolled raised pie, or the lamb, or we've got salmon, you know, vegetables, rolling the dough. And then tarts and galettes. Tarts are fluted tart shells, single crust. These would be the dough would be baked blind. Like you said, you roll the dough out and dock it, poke holes in it, put parchment paper and pie weights or beans or something. You bake the crust unfilled until it's nice and brown because these tarts usually have a lot of moisture in their filling. So if you start with a raw dough, there's no way for the dough to get crispy. This way it's already baked. The dough is crispy. Then you put your filling like Spanish chorizo, red pepper, scallion, and then a little egg and cream to bind it. And you bake that top with a little goat cheese. You bake that, and that's a tart. A galette is a free-raised pie. You would roll a circle out or square, put whatever filling you want, roasted sweet potatoes, shingled, sliced, or whatever, and then you fold the dough over the edge to create a container, so to speak, so any filling and juice doesn't run out. And the double-crusted pies are the two, you know, a raw dough on the bottom, raw dough on top, like you would make, you know, a apple pie, but this would be filled with meat. We have a duck. We've got a number of two-crusted pies. The turnovers, I mean, turnovers are different. We call them turnovers because we didn't want, you could talk about this all day. Empanadas, pierogies, these are all turnovers, pasties. So it's like cut a circle, put a filling, and fold it over and either crimp it or seal it with a fork. And the last one is a vol-au-vent, which is a classic French puff pastry. It's a baked shell. If they're very small, they're called boucher. Or a vol-au-vent, you would make a circle cut and then make another circle cut and cut out the middle like a donut. Put it on top of the first circle and bake it so it rises up and it makes a container.
I turned it on.
Somebody's phone going on? Okay.
Go ahead.
So the vol-au-vent is a container, a puff pastry container that you fill with usually a very rich or savory thing like escargot or crayfish and Armagnac, shrimp and Armagnac, something like that. It's very upscale. And then sauces and condiments are also a chapter that we have sides and sauces and condiments, what to serve with the pies.
Now, I had a question. Now, did you make up all these recipes? Or get them from, your experience in your restaurants and so forth.
Brian got them all off the internet somewhere. I don't know where he is.
Oh, really?
What are you talking about? Yeah, sure. Well, they're all, chefs are like musicians. You borrow from everybody. But, a lot of these traditional techniques, of course, I did not invent. I mean, the vol-au-vent's been around for 500 years, the Beef Wellington, it was made up well before I was born. But I took the concept and made it more for the modern American menu or for our times and then explained the technique.
Yeah, these are all Brian's original recipes.
Yeah, well, I emphasized to start with that you were very strong in technique and that your explanations of techniques are very clear and you give reasons why. I want to equally emphasize the fact that the fillings, the substance of these savory pies, are just in themselves worth spending a lot of time on, because they're just like cucumber and smoked ham salad with pickled red cabbage as a side. I mean, you go into just about everything, and I'm very impressed with this book. I think it will become a standard like charcuterie. We never really explained who you are. Michael wanted particularly to mention, what are you doing now, Michael, and what about your newsletter?
Well, I've got a couple of projects in the works that I'm not really talking about. They're just getting underway, so I don't want to jinx them. But one thing I do, and I've really loved, is I started a Substack newsletter. It's at rollman.substack.com, wherein I talk about food and recipes and cocktails, new cocktails, but also, broader cultural stuff and what we're reading, what we're watching, and also links that we're loving. So I'm really enjoying connecting with readers in the way that we used to do when there were sort of intimate blogs, which aren't really available anymore. And so I really like connecting with readers. And so I really wanted to mention that, the newsletter, because it's important to me to connect with the readers and to be able to answer questions.
And what about you, Brian? You've withdrawn from the public education scene.
Well,
so where's your effort going?
This is actually my 50th year in the kitchen. So I was teaching. I taught college full time for 27 years. Owned my own restaurants for 30, and then been in the kitchen for 50. So I taught full time, ran two restaurants, raised five kids, wrote four books with Michael, coached soccer when they were little. And I thought to myself, I think it's time I retire. So I right now I'm committed to motorcycle riding, and traveling with my wife. That's about it.
And Michael, you've always had a full plate, so people will run into you all over the place, right?
they will. We wrote a lot.
Well, listeners, again, this book is really in the forefront of all kinds of emerging American crafts, and it would do you well to brush up on your technique with it. you need to spend a little time doing the aesthetics, because if you don't do the aesthetics, you'll be very disappointed that your stuff doesn't look like the stuff in the book. And it's a real contribution. I really predict it's going to be a classic. They're so gorgeous. I wish I could make all of these.
Well, you can.
I can. Well, I don't know. Maybe. yeah, I'm not so sure. But at any rate, anything you want to add about the book or about meat pies?
It's coming out. When is it? November 3rd. It's coming out all over.
That's good,
right, Michael?
That's pretty soon.
It's coming out in a couple of weeks, right around election time. So I hope that doesn't get in the way of publicity.
Oh, yeah. Let's not even talk about that.
No, please.
do you think that this will really motivate people to start making these?
That's our goal. That's one of our goals. We want to inspire people to cook and teach them how to cook and teach them craft and teach them technique.
Yeah, but will they be making meat pies in the U.S.?
Oh, yes. I mean, look at what you said. You looked at it and said, I can't make this. And Michael's response of, yes, you can, because we kind of demystified the technique and pointed out the areas what makes success, like the moisture barrier. The same thing we do with charcuterie, why that book is so successful. We kind of took the mystery out of how everybody loves pot stuff, everybody loves cured meat, everybody loves sausage. But if you make it wrong or don't do one step, it won't come out. So we just demystified it and made it accessible to a serious cook, that's all.
Well, I think this one's also going to become a culinary classic on everybody's shelf. Again, Brian Pulson, Michael Ruhlman, meat pies, listeners, get the book, practice, make them pretty too, which I've never done. Well, thank you for talking to us, you guys.
Thank you, Ann. Sure.
Thanks, Ann.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.